Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, we have an update for our San Diego listeners on just how much claims against a San Diego police officer accused of inappropriate actions with women he detained are costing the taxpayers. Plus, we have news about an arrest made in the murder of a woman whose body was found buried in East County 3 years ago. If you're a prolific tweeter on Twitter, hear why the county and San Diego State University may be contacting you for help to get word out during disasters. In our Capitol report, hear which local member of Congress has been voted the top party animal in the House of Representatives by Washingtonian Magazine. Learn about a local school board race pitting a religious conservative against a social justice advocate. Plus, we'll have an update on the statewide spread of West Nile virus. Now, if you're a horse owner or rider, hear about an upcoming meeting in Santee for those interested in joining a sheriff's mounted patrol. And speaking of patrols, the California Highway Patrol will be doing a lot more patrolling of East County highways and roadways thanks to a grant that the agency received. You'll also hear about a proposed regulation that will impact local craft breweries in San Diego. Today, we have two newsmaker interviews, both with candidates running for two separate seats on the Helix Water District Board. We invited all four candidates, and two of them accepted, Kathleen Hedberg, an incumbent seeking re-election as a ratepayers advocate, and Stephen Rotzart, an international water polo referee who wants to be a fiscal watchdog on the board. On Destination East County, hear about some festive events taking place this week and next, from an international jousting tournament and festival of history to the Borrego Days Desert Festival. Plus, we'll have a preview of some spooky Halloween season activities at county parks, from haunted trails to community center carnivals. So stay tuned for all these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.
The city of San Diego has thus far had to pay over $8 million to settle cases with 14 victims who said they were sexually assaulted or subjected to inappropriate sexual advances by former San Diego police officer Anthony Arevalos. Almost two dozen women have lodged complaints ranging from groping to harassment by Officer Arevalos over a number of years. The latest claim is a woman who alleged that Officer Arevalos molested her after picking her up for truancy in the 1990s when she was 14 years old. The woman claims she complained to David Bejarano, who went on to become police chief, and that he covered up the incident. He denies the accusation and says he was not assigned to the Southern Division at the time, the UT San Diego reports. The city's risk management department agreed to pay $50,000 to settle this claim, the maximum that can be paid without requiring city council's approval. The city did not admit fault in the settlement. The woman's name has not been released because she was a minor at the time of the alleged crime. The city entered into the settlement after Dan Gillian, an attorney who was representing several of Arevalos' victims, sued the city, alleging that it routinely rejects claims in order to force victims to incur legal costs to take the city to court. Arevalos has previously been sentenced to 8 years in prison for his crimes against other women. While insurance is paid for a portion of the city's settlements, taxpayers are picking up the balance of the claims. The new San Diego Police Chief Shelley Zimmerman has said that she is taking steps to improve the department's tarnished image through improving hiring policies, training, supervision, and oversight. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
This is Miriam Raftery with an East County Magazine Crime Beat Report. An arrest has been made in the murder of a woman found buried in Boulevard over 3 years ago. David Williams was arrested in Lakeside on Saturday, October 11th, by the San Diego Regional Fugitive Task Force. He is charged with the murder of Christine Crosby, his former girlfriend, whose body was found buried in a shallow grave on Old Highway 80. Christine Crosby was last seen by a friend on July 5th, 2011. About 2 weeks later, she was reported missing to the San Diego Sheriff's Department. Her body was found 2 weeks later.
The medical examiner's office determined that the manner of death was from strangulation and the cause of death was homicide, but it took nearly 3 years for an arrest to be made. On October 10th of this year, the district attorney's office filed formal charges against Williams, who is a construction worker. According to our news partner, 10 News, she was last seen leaving Viejas Casino on a motorcycle with Williams. She had been slated to testify against him in a domestic violence case when she disappeared. Anyone with information about this crime is asked to call the sheriff's homicide detail at 858-974-2321.
Are you a tweet master with a legion of Twitter followers? County officials may soon be enlisting your help. San Diego County is teaming up with San Diego State University to make emergency alerts go viral over Twitter. The project is the brainchild of SDSU geography professor Ming Xiang Su, who directs the Center for Human Dynamics in the Mobile Age on campus. Thanks to a $1 million grant from the National Science Foundation, Su has been studying how the county's Office of Emergency Services can spread alerts about disasters, such as earthquakes or wildfires, quickly and reach targeted areas, even if traditional means of communications, such as phone lines, are not working. Su is searching for 1,000 Twitter users with the most followers locally to ask if they will agree to retweet county emergency messages on Twitter, helping alert residents about evacuation notices, dangerous road conditions, and other urgent alerts. SDSU's News Center reports Su as saying, quote, "If we have 1,000 highly influential volunteers retweeting these messages, almost everybody in San Diego will get the message," unquote. Moreover, Twitter users can embed their GPS coordinates into tweets, helping officials direct retweets to those most likely to reach an impacted area, instead of blasting the entire county with an alert that affects only a limited area. County officials will also be able to use the new system to monitor false information or rumors originating from other sources and send out accurate details. County officials are currently getting training on the system and giving feedback on how it might be improved. Testing is expected after the initial training before the system will be implemented. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Leon Thompson with today's Capitol Report. Last month, we reported on a Democratic legislator, Ben Hueso, who was arrested for driving under the influence after a night of partying at the state capitol. Now we're reporting on a prominent Republican making headlines for partying on Capitol Hill. For the past 28 years, the Washingtonian has surveyed congressional aides about the leadership qualities, or lack thereof, of House members in its Best and Worst of Congress annual report. While some districts' representatives achieve such honors as being named the top workhorse, rising star, or wisest member of Congress, the designation as the top party animal in the House of Representatives was awarded to 50th Congressional District Representative Duncan D. Hunter. That's after House Speaker John Boehner reportedly asked certain House members to refrain from partying with lady lobbyists, Salon reported in 2010. The article cites the New York Post and reports that lobbyist Glenn Lemunyan, a former staffer for disgraced Congressman Tom DeLay, has been hosting after-hours house drinking parties at his home for female lobbyists to socialize with legislators. The publication lists a handful of congressional Republican members who have reportedly frequented Lemunyan's gatherings, including Congressman Duncan D. Hunter, who ran on a family values platform and whose district includes part of San Diego and East County. Those congressional party animals have not been accused of any unlawful activities, it should be noted. The Washingtonian has this to say about the results of this year's survey of congressional staffers published earlier this month. Despite approval ratings lower than Vladimir Putin's, the men and women of the 113th Congress have continued to debate, investigate, raise funds, and campaign with ebullience. Seeing as little, if any, legislation arises from their activities, it's apparent that if there are winners and losers, hits and misses, the average citizen isn't privy to the scorecard, according to the Washingtonian.
This is Miriam Raftery with an education report. One of the more colorful election contests locally this year is a race for a seat on the San Diego Community College Board of Trustees between Donna Woodrum, a religious conservative, and Maria Nieto Sr., a professor with a commitment to social justice and diversity. Woodrum lists herself as a community volunteer on the ballot. So where has she volunteered? She's the secretary and co-founder of San Diego Eagle Forum, a conservative group that describes itself on its website as education-based. According to an article in iNews Source, the Eagle Forum advocates for homeschooling, believes prayer is legal in schools, denounces Islam, and views homosexuality as a disease that can be cured. Woodrum has said she works to book speakers such as former Republican presidential candidate Michelle Bachmann at events. Woodrum is also an author who has written a book titled The Bible Codes and Your Baby's Name. Does the most popular book ever written contain clues to your baby's name? Her opponent, incumbent school board member Maria Nieto Senor, is a college professor and a Ph.D. in guidance counseling. She directs a master's degree program at San Diego State University called Community-Based Block. In 1993, she was named SDSU's Outstanding Professor. According to the San Diego Free Press, Senor advocates for social justice, works to support multi-ethnic communities, and has roots in the Barrio community in San Antonio, as well as inner-city Detroit. She has consulted to over 50 educational organizations, human rights, and peace groups. The race presents a clear contrast for voters in the San Diego Community College District.
This is Ed Barreno with East County Magazine's Health Report. West Nile virus is being found at record levels in California, the state's top health official warns. Dr. Ron Chapman, director of the California Department of Public Health, or CDPH, and state health officer, is reminding Californians to remain vigilant against the threat of West Nile virus. The proportion of mosquitoes infected with West Nile virus is at the highest level ever detected in California, Chapman said earlier this month, after 52 new human cases were reported in a single week. He added, quote, "We expect to see more people become infected as this is the time of year when the risk of infection is the highest," unquote. So far in 2014, West Nile virus has been detected in 36 California counties. There have been 181 human cases reported to the state, a significant increase compared to the 101 cases reported by this time last year. That includes 8 confirmed deaths. West Nile virus is transmitted to humans and animals by the bite of an infected mosquito. For most people, the risk of serious illness is low. However, some individuals, less than 1%, can develop a serious neurologic illness, such as encephalitis or meningitis. People 50 years of age or older and people with diabetes or high blood pressure have the greatest risk of developing serious complications. CDPH recommends that individuals prevent exposure to mosquito bites and West Nile virus by practicing the following steps. Apply appropriate insect repellent to keep mosquitoes from biting you. Mosquitoes bite in the early morning and evening, so it's wise to wear protective clothing and repellent if outside during these times. Make sure that your doors and windows have tight-fitting screens to keep out mosquitoes and repair or replace screens with tears or holes. Mosquitoes lay their eggs on standing water, so eliminate all sources of standing water on your property, including flower pots, old car tires, and buckets. If you know of a swimming pool that is not being properly maintained, please contact the county's vector control agency. California's West Nile virus website includes the latest information on West Nile virus activity in the state. Californians are encouraged to report all dead birds on the website at www.westnile.ca.gov.
This is Leon Thompson with a public service announcement on East County Magazine. The Sheriff's Department is looking for horse owners and riders who would like to become members of the Volunteer Mounted Patrol. They conduct patrols on horseback across San Diego County, including the Santee and Lakeside areas. The Santee Sheriff's Station is hosting a recruitment meeting on Tuesday, October 21st at 6:30 p.m. at the Santee Sheriff's Substation in their conference room at 8811 Cuyamaca Road in Santee. The station's captains, lieutenants, sergeant, and members of the Volunteer Mounted Patrol will be in attendance to answer questions about the unit. Light refreshments will be provided. For more information, visit sdsheriff.net/volunteers or call the Sheriff's Volunteer Services at 858-974-2084.
This is Ed Barreno with East County Magazine's Brew Beat. San Diego is gaining a reputation nationally as one of America's leading craft brewing cities. Breweries have been opening up beer tasting rooms countywide, including in urban and suburban areas, not just at breweries in industrial locations. Now the city of San Diego is considering changing its development code to require that the community be allowed to voice its views when a brewery seeks to open up a secondary off-site tasting room. That process could take up to 6 months, Voice of San Diego reports. Twisted Manzanita Ales and Stone Brewing Company are among the well-known breweries that have expanded off-site beyond their location to reach customers directly. The proposed rule change would assure that a brewery's tasting room at its main brewing location can open without these additional reviews in industrial areas. The matter is expected to come before council by April. But even with the six-month review process to get a permit and allow public comments, the lucrative brewing business is likely to continue to lure brewers to cash in on opportunities to open new tasting rooms. In fact, the city has agreed to partially subsidize expansions for several local brewers in order to support the burgeoning beer-making industry and create new jobs in the region.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. In this year of severe drought and rising water rates, water boards are very important races to keep an eye on in the November election. We have invited all four candidates for the Helix Water Board to be interviewed, and so far, two of them have responded. The first one that we're going to be interviewing today is Kathleen Hedberg, who is an incumbent who has served for 8 years on the Helix Water District Board. Kathleen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam. Thank you for having me.
Now, tell us a little bit about your qualifications, other than obviously having served on the board already.
I'm a registered civil engineer, and my focus is on drinking water systems. I used to work for the State Health Department, inspecting water systems all of Southern California.
What is the most important thing that you would like our listeners to know about your candidacy?
I would like the people to know that I've worked hard for them for the past 8 years, and I want to continue to be their advocate for them on the water board.
So you are an advocate for the ratepayers, then?
That is correct.
Very good. Yes, and we've certainly seen many times there where you were often the only vote on some controversial issues. For example, when it came to rate hikes, the other four voted for them. You voted against them. Can you tell us why?
I look at every line item in the budget, and I make sure that, you know, we're trying to keep our costs down as much as we can for the homeowner. I do understand that, yes, there are water rate increases from other agencies, but it's all about a balance and doing the right thing for the ratepayer.
So instead of raising rates, what would you have done to keep the budget in balance?
Looking at our programs, we could have cut in some areas where we wouldn't need to expand projects and expand construction. Some of the programs could have just been kept down to some areas, yeah, as well as working with our employees and balancing the budget.
Now, there's also been questions of how equitable rate increases are whenever this subject comes up. In other words, if you're going to raise rates, do you raise it on, you know, grandma on Social Security, those on the fixed income? Do you raise it on the higher tier users? What is your philosophy on that?
Well, I do believe in a conservative tiered structure where if people are wasting water, they should be paying more. Mm-hmm. However, our current rate structure, I do feel needs a bit looking at such that it doesn't seem very equitable and fair to all constituents in our district. And currently we are having a rate structure study being done at the district, and hopefully this will shed some new light on some new areas that could be reevaluated.
Yeah, now, as an elected official, you are unusual in that you maintain a list. I've seen where you invite the public, actually, anybody that's on your list. You notify them when there's hearings coming up. You tell them about things like this survey or this study. You invite them to weigh in with their opinions. Do you get some interesting responses to things like that?
I enjoy the feedback from the constituents that I serve. I think it's important, if I'm going to do my job well, that I get the feedback from everyone that is willing to take the time and effort to look at the details and also provide me some insight from what they think.
There's been some controversy even over you reaching out to constituents in that way. I know some on the board had attempted to silence you. They didn't want you to sign that you're a board member when you send your opinion out to people in the public. Tell us how you felt about that and how that's worked out.
Yes, there are some board members who would like it just be just the board members just making all the decisions. But, you know, it is important that us board members, we represent the people and that we are representing them well. And when I would send out emails, it would spark some interest and people would start coming to the meetings and show concern. The board members did not like me putting my name on some of my emails, and to resolve that issue when they said for me to take off my director's salutation, that I needed to put a disclosure that our attorney put together saying that I only represent myself and not the board.
Yeah, seemed obvious anyway. But so you've been an advocate for transparency on a number of issues. Also, I recall the time that the board had to undo a vote because they voted without reading letters from 65, I think it was, ratepayers who'd written in and stating how a rate increase was going to impact them, people who, you know, gave away their fruit from their orchards to the homeless and things, who said they couldn't afford to keep the trees alive. And you turned around and spoke out and helped make them undo that vote, as I recall.
Yes. Whenever I find something that our district needs to make right, I definitely stand up for the people. There's been many instances where we've just gone the wrong direction and we've had to make some corrections.
Okay. Let's talk about the drought. Do you believe that the district is doing enough to address the drought conditions and assure a water supply to the degree that that is possible?
We have gone to a level 2 mandatory drought condition, which now we do have requirements on mandatory watering restrictions and other areas that need to be implemented.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, the district has done as much as we can right now as far as contacting. We did an all call to all our customers and let them know that this is going on. And
what about water recycling and creating additional supplies? Water recycling, purification, some of these options that are being discussed.
Yes. You know, I think with this drought, it's really shown that we cannot be 100% dependable on the Colorado River or the Delta, that we need to create our own local water supplies here in San Diego. And just as we had an opening at Padre Dam Municipal Water District just the other day on their kickoff for their water repurification project and the desal plant that's up in Carlsbad, you know, we need to look at areas where we can create our own water supplies here in the county, as well as reuse our own water supplies on site.
Now, Helix had attempted to do a water purification project out in the El Monte Valley. I think everybody pretty much was supportive of the purification effort, including you, but it went awry because of a lease that didn't work out with the golf course, and the district wound up paying a huge settlement out for that. And as I recall, am I correct in remembering that you were the one vote against the lease negotiation portion that got them into trouble?
Yes, the El Monte project out there when we were going to do the repurification was a great project as far as reusing recycled water. However, since Helix Water District does not have our own recycled water, we had to depend on Padre Dam Municipal Water District for that recycled water. And things got complicated there. However, in conjunction with that, there was the contract that the district was having the El Capitan Golf Course take the lead on this project. And I did believe back then that that was not the right lease to sign with them. And subsequently, they did sue us, and it became a big legal fiasco.
Yeah, so you kind of had the foresight on that one.
Right, which we did resolve recently.
Yes, there was a settlement. Infrastructure is always an issue for water districts. Quick comments on that.
Oh, I believe in having a robust infrastructure project and program. Helix Water District is the oldest district in the county. We're over 100 years old. We just had our 100-year birthday just this last year.
Mm-hmm.
So we have quite a few mains that definitely need to be replaced, and we've been very active in our cast iron replacement program. I definitely think we should continue a steady program on that.
Pensions have been an issue in many local boards. What is the situation with pensions in the Helix Water District, and do you have some thoughts on that to share?
Well, unfortunately, because of the economy and the stock market, the pensions that we did agree to give to our employees currently are unfunded, about over $20 million. And I think that we did have to have pension reform in these past MOUs where the employees will have to pay their employee portion. However, the district's portion is still quite large. And
so you think that the burden of that unfunded pension liability that needs to be shared somewhat between
Correct.
The district and the employees.
Correct. And just recently, this last year, with some funding that we had additional from our budget, we were able to put it towards putting that unfunded pension down. Even though it was a small amount, we are able to knock it down, which actually that was something that I had strongly initiated.
Lake Jennings has been another controversial issue. There were some on the board, actually the majority of the board, was all ready to shut down the lake because it wasn't profitable for the district. This is a resource, of course, that's very popular with many recreational users. And you were one of the voices, I understand, that was instrumental in persuading them to postpone that and instead create a committee that would study ways to try to make the lake not be a financial drain on the district. Tell us how that's working out, Kathleen.
The district has always owned the Lake Jennings campground. We just had leased it out to the county for operation. So when we took back the management, it was about trying to clean it up and then see where we were and trying to make it profitable. And unfortunately, our management of the campground has not been entirely sustainable and successful.
In the past.
And so a couple of years ago, it did come to the board and the board was ready to shut it down, a 3-vote. And
yeah, and you and Joel Scalziti were the 2 votes against that. And eventually you won over a 3rd one there after the public got up. I was at that meeting. Many members of the public got up and pleaded with the board to please keep the lake open. So what's happened now? How's the fishing program working out?
The fishing program has gone through the roof. It's doing a great job. We have a new
so it's profitable
oversight
now.
We are profitable. And now we're looking at what we can do to the campground. And we have put out an ad, which actually is out right now, mm-hmm. to hire a new recreation campground manager, as well as we've put out an RFP, or we're going to look at new marketing strategies and branding for our campground. But it's definitely going to be profitable soon. I just know.
Well, good. That's a very beautiful facility, and I've certainly enjoyed going
yes.
there myself. Your opponent is Maria Mariscal, who has not responded yet to our request for an interview. She works for the San Diego County Water Authority. And Kathleen, in a nutshell, can you tell us what you view as the main differences between you and your opponent?
My opponent, Maria Mariscal, I would agree she does know water, and as well as I know water.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been very active in the community, and I haven't seen her around as far as community groups and membership. And I do also know the operations of the district. So I don't believe that my time is ready to pass the baton on to someone else at this time. And I want to continue to be that advocate for the ratepayers.
Okay. Do you have any parting thoughts that you would like to leave with our listeners today?
I would like to say that if you are interested in any of the issues that I've dealt with over the past 8 years or any concerns and you want to be on my newsletter, you can always go to my website, votehedberg.org, and you can find that information there.
Very good. And I must say I'm impressed. You're the only candidate for any office, Kathleen, I've ever seen where your campaign handout is, it's not a flyer here. What I have in hand is a little hourglass timer for timing your showers for 5 minutes. So that's going to come in handy, I think, for all those parents who want the teenagers to take shorter showers, whoever the water hog in the household may be.
Yes, I do believe awareness is the first step. And for every minute we can cut back on our water use helps everyone in the state.
Very good. Well, thank you very much, Kathleen Hedberg, for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you, Miriam.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. We've been speaking with Helix Water Board candidates this week. And next, my guest is Stephen Rotzart, who is a candidate for Seat 2 in the Helix Water District. He's running against incumbent Deanna Verbecki. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, your background and qualifications, and why you're running.
Well, I'm born and raised in the community. I've lived in the East County for just about 40 years now. Raised my family here. We have three small children, attend the local schools as well. And we have a vested interest in making sure the community stays with its roots and how I was raised. My qualifications specifically, predominantly, my day-to-day job is in real estate, developing brokerage services, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. But it, also, my wife and I participate heavily in nonprofit work, predominantly in the East County area. East County YMCA and the Mount Helix Park Foundation are very big passions of our family. And seeing both those foundations succeed has been really just an amazing, amazing thing to watch over a period of time and how much they've given back to the community.
So now you're hoping to bring your successful experience with the nonprofits to bear on the Helix Water Board. I understand that you've also had some hands-on experience with water. That's rather unusual. Tell us about that.
So my background with water is sport-driven. More specifically, I represented the United States at the 2012 London Games as the water polo referee. I started in water polo back when I was 18 years old and have continued it ever since, and it has provided me an avenue to see all parts of the world, but more specifically represent my country, and it was truly an honor.
Very good. Well, you certainly would appreciate the importance of water then with that particular background. What prompted you to run for the Helix Water Board specifically?
Well, specifically, it was brought to my attention. We had some issues with fiscal responsibility, mm-hmm. and that is really my background with regards to nonprofits and making sure that we're staying within budget to get projects done and to get them done equitably. Mm-hmm. I was approached by a series of neighbors who came to me and said, you know, Steve, with all your success in the nonprofit work, would you consider running for Helix Water Board? And after investigating and consulting with my family, obviously, I felt it was the right time because we are in a very, very dire situation right now. Obviously, water is very precious.
Yeah, the drought.
We have rates that are continuing to go up. And there's really no accountability. We really have nothing that has been provided to the ratepayers as evidence that, hey, listen, this is what we're doing for you. And with my vested interest in the community, I felt it was now is the right time to get somebody that's on the board that actually has the voice of the ratepayers and that will provide the questions and the balances to the board to put it back on staff so that we can actually have reliable, equitable water.
Okay. So what specific plans do you have for trying to keep rates down?
The biggest thing right now is fiscal responsibility. Currently, Helix Water District is $18 million over budget over last year. And there's really no accountability of where those funds have gone. We have seen salaries and pensions increase. We have seen rates go up to offset some of those expenses. However, the reality is that there's really nothing that the district can provide the ratepayer saying, yes, this is why we need $18 million. Really, what needs to happen is the board needs to push back these budgets back onto the staff themselves and said, you need to do a better job. We need to cut. You're asking our ratepayers to cut water, but what have you done internally? And really, we're just not seeing that right now on the existing board.
What are your thoughts about the equitability of water rates? In other words, there's been a lot of controversy about whether the burden should go more on, say, the large property owner or the large water user, whether there should be allowances, say, for your family size, whether we should continue to have the minimum allowances for, say, people on fixed incomes, low-income folks.
I can only speak for my district because those are the people that I visit. And right now, what I can tell you is that my district is made up of from everybody that's living in an apartment all the way to people that have 2.5 to 5 acre parcels. And the reality is this: our large parcel owners are really having difficulty in these current times, trying to keep their yards green, trying to keep them safe from fire and things of that nature. And with that, we really need to come up with new avenues. One of the things that the district used to have was called an agricultural meter. An agricultural meter was allowed to put on a parcel so that you could actually have water only for watering services.
Familiar. That was an issue in my neighborhood, and they took it away.
That's right.
And you wound up with people who had orchards that they were using to feed their family. Some of them gave their fruit away to the homeless or to friends in need or even sold small amounts of it. And all of a sudden, you can't afford to keep the trees alive, and yet you can't afford to cut them down either. It could be thousands of dollars to cut even a couple of trees, let alone an entire orchard. So what would you do about the agricultural meter situation?
I would definitely be in favor of bringing them back. And the reason is it's twofold. The agricultural meter allows for a ratepayer to go ahead and water their yards, their orchards, and things that they need to as far as plant life is concerned. The second part of it, when you get into the residential meter, now it's isolated for the house. And some of my ratepayers in my district actually pay sewer fees based off that water usage. Well, you wouldn't be paying sewer fees off of an agricultural usage. You would only be paying sewer fees off the usage for the house meter itself. And that becomes really important, especially when we're dealing with budgets and fixed income individuals that have to only make sure that every dollar is accounted for that's coming out of their property.
Okay. What specific ideas do you have for further encouraging conservation of water and also for paring back expenses? If you want to keep rates down, then obviously the expenses have to get cut somewhere else, or you have to find a way to increase revenues through some creative means other than the ratepayers.
One thing that I don't think the district has done is really reach out to the building department at all. And this became clearly obvious a number of years ago when I tried to do it myself. The reality is that we need to work with the different entities that actually facilitate the usage and the wastewater. Right now, only up until a couple years ago, could you plumb your property for a gray water system?
Yeah.
Most of my ratepayers in my district have no idea about that. They did not know that they could actually go and file for a permit and actually get a gray water system at their property to pay for orchards, to pay for anything.
Maybe is that something that the district should be promoting, getting the word out on?
Absolutely.
Okay. What about in terms of the drought? Is enough being done to assure a safe and reliable drinking water supply for customers in the Helix Water District?
I do have to say, the Helix Water District does an impeccable job providing safe, reliable, and healthy water for our ratepayers. And even their backup systems in place. Some of our ratepayers were affected during the thunderstorms that rolled through a month and a half ago, and we lost power. But you know what? We didn't lose water. So that aspect of it, I have to tell you that the district really has done a fantastic job, and the staff at the district has done a fantastic job to make sure that the ratepayers actually do have water. Now we just have to make sure that we can do it equitably.
What about things like encouraging recycling of water? There's been some discussions with Padre Dam. There was kind of a failed effort at a water recharge project out in the El Monte Valley that wound up being a legal nightmare, so to speak, for the district. Can you comment on those?
Sure. A couple different things. First, the desalinization plant in Carlsbad is online, and we should be receiving water in that within it's about a two-year time frame now once it's completed.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest exciting part for East County residents, though, is that we just the other day, and most news agencies had a very great video clip of everything going on there, of a reclaimed water treatment it's a project that is being done out at Padre Dam. And they received a grant from the federal government in order to facilitate this project. The project being successful will produce over 1 million gallons a day. 1 million gallons a day of water right now, of reclaimed water, would facilitate a tremendous amount of residences, agriculture, and things of that nature for our East County residents. And that is an avenue that definitely needs to be researched more. Now, this project is limited to Padre Dam, and the future of it really still remains to be seen. But with its success, we can see that other agencies, and it's already been talked in joint ventures and things of that nature, with Otay, Padre Dam, mm-hmm. and Helix, having another reclaimed water treatment plant so that we can actually produce water for our ratepayers.
Very good. So that could be a source of drinking water in the future for
Absolutely.
The ratepayers in Helix. Let's talk about Lake Jennings. The board at one point was ready to close it down. The majority was, and there was a couple of vocal minority board members that spoke out and said, let's not be so hasty. The public came in and testified, and so they set up a committee to study it for a year and figure out if they could find a way to make the lake be profitable for the district. They've made some progress, I understand, but let's hear your views on that.
Lake Jennings is an asset that we cannot do away with. It's one of the most prized possessions in East County that Helix Water District currently owns and manages, and it's an asset for our ratepayers to be able to go and use it, and all the East County residents. But the biggest thing is this pilot project that was done for a year, actually what probably no one knows is that it actually succeeded. And it was such a success because it actually broke even to be able to have the park open, to be able to have people use it. The fishing was profitable. They've done a great job in bringing people into Lake Jennings.
Yeah, they've turned that around.
Now, they just recently hired a park ranger, and now they're going to get the camping online, and they're going to promote the park mm-hmm. even more. And I think with that success, you're going to see the rejuvenation of Lake Jennings, and you're going to see the passion of the East County residents that want to make sure that it succeeds.
Yeah.
I think a great example of that is using other water districts. Example, Santee Lakes has been a tremendous asset for that community, and Lake Jennings can do the same thing here for us in our Helix Water District ratepayers. It's just it's a fantastic piece that really needs to be promoted and invited people in, and I really think that it will be a success in the future.
Yeah, not only for recreational users that enjoy going there, but also potentially a revenue stream in the future once it's completely in the black again.
Absolutely.
Okay. One last issue, and that issue is transparency and accountability of the board. This board in the past, there's been a few stories that have been run about different things like Brown Act violations, open government issues there, and yet when this was reported on one occasion, I recall Director Verbecki, when she was chairing a meeting, up there blasting the media for reporting on things that the district had done wrong or that were controversial. What are your views on that?
Transparency is paramount. And the reason is because we're the voice of the ratepayer, and the only thing that we can use to get back to the ratepayer is the media. And so you have to have that transparency. You have to have this working relationship with the media to be able to get the message across, because if there's always going to be controversial issues, and we're going to have to deal with them. We're obviously, the drought is very important right now, and we have to use the media to be able to communicate with our ratepayers on a regular basis. And so transparency is paramount, even if there are difficult issues to discuss and to work through. We're going to have to rely on the media to be able to provide that transparency for our ratepayers.
Do you have any endorsements you'd like to share?
The biggest endorsement, and I'm really proud of this, is the Grossmont Mount Helix Improvement Association has endorsed me as their candidate for the seat number 2 for Helix Water District. It encompasses 7,000 residents and making up the Mount Helix and Hidden Mesa area, and that's really a fantastic opportunity. I'm very proud to have that endorsement.
Very good. And I'd like to add that we have invited all of the 4 candidates who are running for the Helix Water Board to be on the show. 2 have responded thus far. We've interviewed Director Hedberg, Kathleen Hedberg, and now candidate Stephen Rotzart, and we hope the other 2 will respond, so we'll have an opportunity to let you hear from them directly. I want to thank you very much for being on the show today. Any final words for our listeners out there?
For any information, feel free to visit stephen4water.com, and I look forward to November 4th election.
Very good. Thanks for joining us on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County has some awesome autumn activities, from a spooky hayride in Julian to classic car cruising at Santee Lakes, plus an international jousting competition, all in San Diego's inland regions.
Plus, we have a preview of next week's coming attractions, including Live on the Promenade in Lemon Grove and Haunt Fest in Main Street in downtown El Cajon.
So stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more from East County Magazine.
An international jousting competition will be held during the Tournament of the Phoenix and Festival of History, held October 7th through 19th at the Powwow Rodeo Grounds. This fascinating event also features period camps from Rome to the Renaissance. This year, the festivities feature some new attractions, including a bird of prey flight show, storytelling, gypsy horses, a border horse, 16th century reenactment, craft beers, and extended children's activities. For ticket information and details, visit worldjoust.com.
All makes, models, and years of automotive history are welcome to partake in Cruise in the Lakes car show at Santee Lakes. The last two cruise events this season take place on Friday, October 17th and 24th, beneath the shade trees at the northwest corner of Lake One, where show time starts at 3 p.m. and ends at 7 p.m., complete with music and barbecue grills. Bring stories, a chair, fishing pole, and picnic basket. Prize drawings will also be held at this event, sponsored by the Classic Movers and Shakers Car Club.
The Julian Mining Company will host a spooky hayride on October 18th and 25th at 7:30 and 8:30 p.m., complete with tales of early miners in this historic gold rush town. Advance reservations are required. Tickets can be reserved at julianminingcompany.com. Arrive a half hour early for free popcorn and apple cider.
It's all aboard the Pumpkin Express at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum in Campo. The 10th annual Halloween seasonal rides take place Saturday and Sunday from now through October 26th, with trains departing three times daily. Ride the rails to the Great Pumpkin Patch, then tour the haunted train, where each child gets to pick out his or her own pumpkin and decorate it. Advance reservations are required for this popular event. For ticket prices, reservations, and directions to the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum, visit www.psrm.org.
The Julian Open Studio and Galleries Tour will be held on Saturday, October 18th, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Visit the private studios of artists in the backcountry of San Diego on this self-guided tour. Meet and talk with the artists while enjoying their artwork. Maps and tickets are available at the Julian Town Hall on Main Street, in the heart of the historic Gold Rush era town.
An enchanted garden gala to benefit the Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College will be held on October 18th from 6 to 10 p.m. Performance artists will entertain guests amidst illuminated gardens, and a gourmet seated dinner will be followed by a program hosted by NBC TV Channel 7 meteorologist Dagmar Midcap. The program benefits the garden's educational programs and a new children's garden. For more information, visit thegarden.org.
The Shirt House Bluegrass Band will perform a free concert at the El Cajon Library on Saturday, October 18th at 2 p.m. The concert is presented by the San Diego Bluegrass Society and will feature folk, rock, gospel, and bluegrass music.
Friends of the Lemon Grove Library's music series will present the acclaimed guitarist and composer Peter Sprague in the Modern Jazz program. This free concert will be held on October 21st in the Lemon Grove Library at 6:30 p.m. and is suitable for ages 12 and over.
The third annual Haunt Fest on Main Street will provide thrills for all ages on Friday, October 24th from 5 until 10 p.m. in downtown El Cajon. The annual family-friendly event features live music on two stages by Mighty Untouchables, Fabulous Pelicans, and Ryan Hiller. A costume contest will be held on the Main Street stage. There will also be expanded carnival rides and a game area on Rio Street and a car display, a terror truck, candy trails, kids zone, and outdoor movies at balloon artists and face painting performances by TNT dancers, Rubio's Performing Arts Studio, and St. Madeline Sophie's Center. Other activities include craft and game booths, a magic show, inflatable jumpers for kids, and a pumpkin patch and more. For additional information, visit hauntfestmaine.com.
City Beat teams up with the Lemon Grove Historical Society to present Lemon Grove Live on October 25th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Main Street Promenades Amphitheater, located at the corner of Broadway and Lemon Grove Avenue. Bring a cushion and enjoy this free concert featuring a wide variety of street musicians, including opera, rock, indie folk, saxophone, and world music.
The Borrego Days Desert Festival takes place October 24th through October 26th in Borrego Springs. Activities include a parade complete with floats, bands, dancers, and equestrians, a flyover, live inflatable water slides, obstacle course, and bull ride. Visitors can also shop at arts and craft vendors, savor foods including gourmet food truck items, beer, and beverage garden.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event or you'd like to add to our calendar, or if you'd like to sponsor the Destination East County show on KNSJ, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County. See you around, East County.
Ghosts, goblins, and zombies, oh my. Halloween is coming, and County Parks has something planned every weekend as the days count down to the big event. First, the woods come alive with creatures natural and supernatural at Dos Picos County Park in Ramona during its 7th annual Haunted Trails event October 18th. Hundreds turn out each year to see what kind of things go bump in the night out there, and don't be surprised to see the stuff of nightmares, even chainsaws. If you go, wear good shoes, bring a jacket and flashlight, and proceed with caution as spirit guides lead the hike starting at 6:30 p.m. Now, if that sounds too scary for your little ones, you can take them out to Family Discovery Day's Not So Scary Estuary on October 18th and 19th, that's Saturday and Sunday, at the San Elijo Lagoon Ecological Reserve from 1 to 4. The tykes can meet creepy, crawly, and hooting nocturnal animals. Kids can also pretend to be spiders themselves and climb through a giant spider web. They will be trick-or-treating around the loop trail and prizes for most creative, eco-friendly, and best nocturnal-themed costumes. Halloween in Hellhole sounds rather frightening, and if that's what you're aiming for, check out the Haunted Trail at Hellhole Canyon Open Space Preserve in Valley Center Saturday. You can get spooked on the trail and then shake off the eerie feelings during the costume contest or pumpkin decorating contest. The first 20 pumpkins will be provided, but you should bring your own carving tools, along with lawn chairs, a flashlight, blankets, warm clothes after the sun goes down, and you can catch the free outdoor movie. A giant pumpkin patch will sprout up at the waterfront park downtown in front of the county administration building on Sunday, October 19th. Kids can pick out their very own pumpkin and decorate it at one of the arts and crafts booths. There will be giant inflatable bounce houses, a magician, local entertainers, and a festive family photo area, along with food trucks on hand if you want a bite to eat. Dia de los Muertos, or Day of the Dead, will be celebrated October 25th, that's a Saturday, at Rancho Guajome Adobe and Vista. This colorful festival is celebrated as a holiday in Mexico. While typically celebrated on November 2nd, Rancho Guajome will honor the tradition the weekend before Halloween. Expect to find altars honoring the dead, traditional music and dancing, arts, crafts, food, and self-guided tours of an adobe house that dates back to 1853. On Halloween night, several community centers are holding free spooktacular parties for youngsters. Those little monsters, action heroes, and princesses can get treats, play games, and compete for prizes at the Lakeside Halloween Festival, the Fallbrook Safe Halloween, and the Spring Valley Halloween Festival. Not to be outdone, the waterfront park downtown is scaring up a movie for Halloween night. You can bring chairs, blankets, and of course the kids to watch Hotel Transylvania. The film will begin around dusk, but come early for lawn games at this free event. For those who just can't quite give up Halloween for the year, check out the free San Dieguito Fall Festival from 12 to 3 on Saturday, November 1st at San Dieguito County Park in Solana Beach. You can wear your costumes one last time, decorate pumpkins, drink cider, visit a critter camp of park pets, and discover what wildlife lives in the area. For details on these and other park events countywide, visit sdparks.org or visit San Diego County Parks Facebook page. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
In the coming days, East County drivers will be seeing more CHP officers on the roads. That's because the California Highway Patrol has received a grant from the California Office of Traffic Safety to fund more CHP patrols on East County highways and major roadways. The number of CHP officers will be increased on Interstate 8, State Routes 54, 94, and 125, as well as on Hamashaw Road, Dehesa Road, and Winter Gardens Boulevard. The state hopes to reduce the number of crashes. From October 2011 to September 2012, in more than 1,500 accidents that occurred in the CHP's El Cajon District, which encompasses most of East County, over 2,000 people were injured and 50 were killed in just 1 year. The grant also includes money for a safe driving program, which authorities hope will reduce the high number of crashes, many of which were caused by speeding or driving under the influence of alcohol or drugs. Reminding you to drive safely and reporting for East County Magazine, this is Ed Barrena.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barrena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.